Spirit Radio Podcasts.
January, I think, every year, but now more than ever, is a year that is really difficult on our bank accounts, and we're kind of thinking of all we spent at Christmas, but also kind of looking to the year ahead. And it's also a time of year for a lot of people when you've different policies renewed. You might have gotten a few bills like I did this week, and they all seem to come at once. But how can we try and manage these things and plan a little bit for 2021, especially when it's also a really uncertain time? Well, on the line to give us some of his advice, we have John McNicholas, who's CEO of Ethical Financial. Morning to you, John.
Hi, Wendy. How are you?
Look, everybody this morning is going, we don't know what's going to happen in the next few weeks, let alone the next year, whether it's concerning somebody's job, whether we're thinking about the impacts of Brexit. So how do you plan in this kind of economy?
Yeah, well, look, it's difficult to take any kind of a long-term view at the moment in terms of Brexit at this point, or any of the bigger kind of macro issues, you know. There's no doubt about that, Wendy. So I think, you know, people just have to kind of live in the moment for now. And we have to live with the potential uncertainty for their jobs if they have it, you know. But look, I mean, I probably think just kind of control what you can control for now is as good
as what are the things? What are the things that we can control from a budget perspective?
Yeah. So look, I mean, you've probably heard the phrase, and I've used it myself, no doubt, and everyone probably has, is, you know, when you reflect on your finances, you think, I don't know where it goes.
Yeah, I know. This used to be, well, still is sometimes, a monthly conversation in our house when there'd be, I don't know, 10 days to payday, and I would ring my husband and I'd say, there's no money left. And he would
can you transfer money in from our savings?
And he'd love saying, well, we spent this and that added up. And you go, oh, yeah. And it does. It feels like the drip kind of taking of money can all add up. But it's still not nice having that kind of heart attack.
No, it isn't. And you end up kind of living like most of us do, is you kind of end up living month to month, paycheck to paycheck, you know, using overdraft, using credit cards, whatever, you know. It's not particularly enjoyable way to live financially, you know. So that phrase is a good, if you had to do one thing this year, Wendy, and one is probably enough given the year we're in, or the lockdown facing, is that phrase is, I don't know where my money goes, I don't have a clue. And that would probably, if there's only one thing you're doing this year, that would be a good start to try and find out where exactly your money is going each month.
So what's the easiest way to do this exercise, John, especially for people who are going, I'm not good with numbers, I'm no Excel whiz, exactly. You know?
Yeah, and that's the point I was going to make, is that there's good apps out there, Wendy, like Pocket Guard is one, or Mint is one, but actually what we recommend using is, there is a budgeting form very helpfully done on the MABS website, mabs.ie for MABS, and that is really good. It's a real good breakdown of expenses, and it's pretty simple to use. You know, they have guides and tools online for how to use it, you know. And these guys are the experts in budgeting, so I would really start, and I've done this personally over the last while, start using their resources and their budget. And that'll give you a good breakdown of everything, like, you know, groceries, kind of milk and bread, or day-to-day shops you do in addition to your weekly shop, you know, what nappy costs are, the kind of stuff that you wouldn't think if you're doing it yourself. You think, oh, there's too much to think about, I've forgotten half it. Well, don't. There's a good resource there to remind you of all these things, you know.
And what about, John, people are saying, okay, I go on to MABS.ie, do my budget, put everything in and go, but here's the thing, my expenditure is exceeding my income, so what do I do?
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I mean, it's a good point you raised, Wendy. I mean, the first step, if nothing else, is to try and have a budget. You know, that's a really good step to achieve. Most people don't, and we kind of go around circular in this. So the second step is, once you have a budget, you know, pat yourself on the back. Well done. It's been a good start to the year. And get that done first. And the second thing is, when we've had success with that, we have a better chance of trying to control some of our expenses. And that is really the next step to this. So a big kind of area you'll hear of, and you probably, I don't know, your own personal financial expenses, Wendy, but it's to try and have a good tip is to try and have a weekly meal plan. So you're actually planning just a week at a time what meals you're going to cook.
Because you end up throwing so much food out, and that's throwing money in the bin as well. It's just the waste.
Throw a bit out, but probably more to the point is that, like, when you end up, because it is a bit stressful at the moment, and people find themselves having, you know, more takeaways, or having the only thing you can do is to go walk within 2Ks and get a takeaway coffee or something, so which is fine, but the problem is that you end up kind of impulse spending or spending money that you didn't really have or plan to spend, you know. And this is kind of gets back to the point that you're spending more than you have or more than you realized you were. So I would probably start with a weekly meal plan. Try and stick to it for the week and plan into that plan any coffees you want to have or any takeaway you want to have, and actively plan to them and stick to it.
So it's about being realistic as well. So it might be a case of, especially as you say, for some people, John, for example, during these lockdowns, a takeaway is the brightness in their week. But it might be a case saying, you know what, we can afford to have it every 2 weeks instead of every week or whatever it is.
It is. But the funny thing with that, Wendy, is actually, like with any, I said, finance isn't usually enjoyable for people. It's usually kind of a panic thing. You just live in month to month. The funny thing is, when you actually plan in a takeaway, whatever it is, as you said, 10 days time or 6 days time, whatever it is, and you have the money for it, it's actually quite enjoyable. It's something to look forward to, and you can actually eat it guilt-free, saying, oh, I know I'm not going to run out of money, you know? So it's actually a more enjoyable experience. And that's probably just one of the more practical things that people can do this year, you know, is to try and have weekly meal plans, try and stick to it, and try and kind of manage or control some of your expenses, you know. And that's a really good start. That's probably a second point I have had success with personally over the last year.
What about, John, so you have your kind of weekly planning, but what about people who are in that situation where you get a whole load of kind of bigger bills that come at once? It could be health insurance, home insurance. What else did I got this week? The car tax, the TV license.
The NCT was postponed with lockdown, but it's coming up hard. You know, that usually requires a service to your car or some kind of, usually there's a bit of work to be done, is it not, for it to pass NCTs. So you have kind of more annual expenses that you probably haven't foreseen. So I think the next step is, once you have control of the kind of monthly expense and the weekly, the next step then, Wendy, beyond that, is just to try and plan ahead for the different expenses and either set money aside, or some of them, like the, you know, some set money aside for the big annual expenses, or some of them you can actually switch to monthly direct debits, like car insurance or different stuff like that. You know, you have the option. It's usually a tad cheaper to pay it annually than monthly. But actually, for a lot of people, it's actually been more stressful. You get a €1,000 bill in February that you weren't expecting, you know. So probably it's just then we're at the next stage after monthly, so trying to get control of the annual stuff or the larger stuff and set money aside for that.
Yeah, and kind of dividing it up and saying, okay, to pay all these bills.
There's no easy way for that. Like, you know, there's no easy way for it. Like, if you have an €800, as in, you have to start planning for next year. If you have an €800 bill in, you know, due in March, you have to start kind of planning for it now, you know. But for the next March of 2022, at least you'll have got ahead of it, you know. So you'll kind of be learning and improving at this stuff as you go. And improvement is a good point to this, Wendy. No, it's not a science. It's not something you have to be perfect at by next week, you know.
Yeah, you're just trying to make these incremental changes.
Yeah.
Finally, just ask you, John, what about, I know many people listening might be in that situation where they have big credit card bills that they're paying big interest on, or they're looking at different loans that they've got and they're thinking of practical ways to actually try and eke away at these sums of money.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, that is, and that is definitely an area that MAB specialise in, is the kind of loan consolidation, because credit card interest, you know, can be anything, 15-16%, which means paying the interest is hard enough, never mind making any kind of a dent into the actual debt itself, you know. So usually, Wendy, there's kind of ways to kind of have a loan consolidation, put any of your short-term debts into one loan with a bank or a credit union, and actively then try and chip away at that. So that's probably a bit more of a professional piece, not something I would recommend a DIY on. Is to try and, if you have a few debts, is not to try and say, oh, I'll sort this myself. You probably won't. Most people probably don't.
What do you find people are coming to Ethical Financial for mostly at the moment, John?
Yeah, well, look, we probably specialise, Wendy, in kind of tax planning and family planning and investments. So we still have a lot of that business coming in. But you're right. I think people are using the time at the moment when they're maybe working from home, is to start trying to plan ahead a bit more, saying, grand, I'm usually flat commuting to an office, you know, 8 to 6 every day, and now, you know, a bit of time at lunchtime. So people are actually using this time to contact us and say, look, I wouldn't mind thinking ahead a bit more of my finances and, you know, trying to buy a house or trying to plan for pensions or, you know, trying to get on top of my finances. So people are, we're actually quite busy and taking on new staff at the moment to try and keep up with the demand.
Well, it's good to hear good news, John, from an Irish business perspective. Thanks so much for joining us on the programme this morning, and happy new year to you. That's John McNicholas, CEO of Ethical Financial. If you want to find out more details about the work that they're doing, ethicalfinancial.ie is the website. Spirit. It's great to have with me on the line Pastor Nick Park, who's also the Executive Director of the Evangelical Alliance Ireland and Senior Pastor of the Solid Rock Church. Nick, good morning to you.
Good morning, Wendy. Great to be with you.
Do you know what, Nick? For some people, they will have been able to attend church at Christmas. You know, they got their place, they got their ticket, or however it worked.
Yeah.
And just as you're connecting up with your church again and your community, the rug is pulled out from under you again, and it's just so difficult.
It is difficult, and it is frustrating, you know. We were open in Drogheda for a few weeks, 3 weeks, I think, and then we were closed again, you know. So this has been a hard time. It really has.
And what do you say to people who are just kind of saying the move back online to online services? I mean, it's brilliant that so many different churches are being really innovative and everything, but it's just hard to find the same level of connection, especially for people, Nick, where, you know, church is their extended family and their community, and they might be feeling especially isolated at this time.
Yeah, well, I mean, community is a huge part of church, and I know the churches that I work with, it especially is. You know, we people over the last few years have started coming to our churches, even people who are atheists coming into our buildings and worshipping with us, because they love the sense of community. And it's like the belonging comes first and then the believing comes afterwards. So when you take away that sense of community and everything is just online, I mean, you're gutting something that is so important to church life. You know, so it's very hard for churches indeed. Having said that, with where the country is at the moment and what's going on, I think it would be political suicide for any government to actually just throw the churches open. So, we recognize the terrible situation that's going on around us, but it is very frustrating and hard.
How important is it, Nick, for people to try and focus on hope? And this is what faith is all about, is to try and give us hope, especially when we're carrying big crosses.
Well, yeah, I think that's hugely important, because the fact is that the church has a message that really needs to be shared now more than ever before. And people are wanting to hear that message. I mean, I saw some research lately, and this is actually internationally across a number of different countries, is that sales of Bibles have gone through the roof. You know, that people are, particularly when there's lockdowns and stuff like that, people are searching for God, some of the most unlikely people. And we as the church have the answer for those people. And for me, I think right now, where we're at this moment in time, we've got to concentrate on reaching out and sharing that with as many people as possible.
And I think that's a question that a lot of people have, and it has been encouraging to see. And I know there's been a few different kind of pieces of research kind of backing up what you're saying, where people are turning to faith, they're rediscovering or re-engaging with the faith that maybe they had lost connection with. But of course, in normal times, you know, if you had a friend, for example, that was doing that, you'd want to say, oh, do you want to come to my church, or this talk is on, but we can't do that now. What's the best way we can encourage one another in our faith at this time?
Well, I think you can use the what is available. I mean, there are certain things, you know. So, for example, many churches are still open for private prayer, and also, you know, you're still able, under limited circumstances, to meet up with somebody and go for a walk or whatever. So I think we need to make the most of those kinds of contacts. And other than that, you know what? It's amazing. I've been absolutely amazed at the response I've got during this time, where just a simple phone call. I actually phoned somebody up for it was a wrong number. I accidentally phoned them. And I felt so guilty, because they appreciated the phone call, and it turned into a great conversation about faith with them. And I hadn't even intended it. But I think these kind of things have much more value at this time, and we need to utilize them as much as we can, and pray that we can get back to to what we really want to be doing, which is meeting together and seeing people face to face as soon as possible.
I think it's really important though, Nick, just at that point that you're raising. And I think if Jesus was walking among us, you know, during this lockdown, that's what he'd be telling us to do. Reach out to people, talk to people, don't go inward, and you can still share goodness outwardly, even when it has to be done in different ways.
Yeah, and I think that's why I feel it's very important as a Christian that the frustration that I feel at not being able to gather for worship, it's important that that doesn't become all-consuming. Because, you know, this coronavirus thing is not going to last forever. You know, thank God it will be a memory that we look back at and say, gosh, do you remember that? But there's people around us that we want to reach with the good news of Jesus for the next 20, 30 years. And what we don't want to do is to create a scenario where they're looking back and saying, well, at the moment when the country was facing a crisis, these people actually went on more about their own needs and demanding their rights than they did in actually offering hope to others. So I think it is important that while we can never stop valuing and praying for, you know, the church gathering together in person, if it becomes all-consuming and that's all that we're talking about and all that people hear from us, then that actually ends up being quite a poor witness for the gospel.
Yeah, one of the things that you were mentioning, feeling frustrated earlier, Nick, and I know a lot of people listening would have been a lot more than frustrated when they heard or indeed saw what happened on RT television on New Year's Eve. Tell us a little bit about it and the letter that you sent to the newspapers that was printed earlier on in the Irish Times this week.
Yeah, well, I saw a clip afterwards of what was on, because I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't even dream of tuning into RTE on New Year's Eve. I was watching Jules Holland over on BBC Two.
The man who loves the music, obviously.
Oh, and I tell you what, because while our national broadcaster was broadcasting Blasphemy, over on BBC Two, they were singing the gospel song Peace in the Valley, a wonderful bluesy version of it, which was great. But they aired a sketch which was, to be honest, was not even funny. I mean, there wasn't even anything humorous about it, which was portraying God as a rapist and Mary, the mother of Jesus, as a rape victim. And I contacted RTE about this and had a letter published in the Irish Times as well with pretty much the same content. And the point I was making was this, that what that sketch was, it wasn't just that it offended people. And that's actually what's been quite annoying, because RTE's apology has been, oh, we're sorry people got offended, which is almost like it's putting the blame back on the people who got offended, rather than those that deliberately caused the offence. Because if you take away the deliberate desire to cause offence, there was absolutely no rationale for even airing that, because it was only humorous in the same way that little boys find it humorous when they stand at the open doors to a church and shout obscene words inside. The only possible humour that anyone could have derived from that sketch was people that just despise the church and really wanted to feast on the outrage that would ensue from it. And I think that was a particularly damaging course of action for our national broadcaster to take.
Do you think as well, Nick, it's fair to say that if that type of so-called satire was directed at another faith or another group of people, that even though RTE has apologised, many would say it's hollow because they've left the clip up on the player, that yeah, it just simply wouldn't have happened, it wouldn't have been written, and that it's almost an acceptable prejudice, this type of thing, to be put out there against Christians?
Well, the very fact that they're making a joke even about rape, I mean, would be totally unacceptable in any other circumstances. I mean, you look at what happened, for example, to George Hook, whenever he made comments about rape that offended people. Now, he was not joking about rape. This from my point of view, what RTE did on New Year's Eve was far more insulting to rape victims than George Hook's comments. And yet, that would not be allowed in any other subject. But whenever it comes to this point of let's have a go at the church, then it's like all other standards of decency are excused in order to poke fun at people of faith. I think that's despicable.
There has been a huge number of complaints and an apology from RTE. Do you think it went far enough?
I don't think it went far enough. I think the presenter himself in the sketch, I'm not going to try and say his name because I didn't do Irish at school.
Angus McGreen, yeah.
There you go. You say that much better than me. I was educated in the North, Wendy, and I didn't do Irish. So can I tell you something? This is just a little aside, but in our church, we announce people's birthdays. I get the Nigerian name spot on, and I struggle with Irish names. But, no, the presenter, Angus, he actually did a very fulsome apology where he said, look, I was wrong. And I think that was a real apology. Now, I'm not looking for heads to roll over this thing, and I'm not demanding resignations. But what I am saying is that just saying we're sorry people got offended is not good enough. And that RTE should be looking and saying we were very wrong to do this in the first place, and we are going to ensure that it will not happen again. And that's what they need to be doing.
Well, Nick, thanks so much for joining us on the programme today and for sharing some of your thoughts. And if you are in agreement with what some of Nick is saying, I think it's still very important to send in your complaints to RTE. If that's how you feel, you can send an email to complaints@rte.ie. That was Pastor Nick Park. He's also the Executive Director of the Evangelical Alliance in Ireland and Senior Pastor at the Solid Rock Church. Spirit. Well, with me on the line, going to give us some tips to try and navigate our way through parenting and looking after ourselves during this lockdown. We have Joanna Fortune, clinical psychotherapist and author of the 15-Minute Parenting Series. Morning, Joanna. I'm sure you've been inundated with questions of people getting in touch with you since the latest news of school closures and what this lockdown really means.
Absolutely. Good morning, Wendy. I have, and I just think, you know, there's a shared collective anxiety about, you know, how long will this be? How will we handle it? And of course, it's a totally different ballgame this time round. First of all, it's our third time. I think we're all showing a little bit of wear and tear, a little bit of fatigue with all of this, but we're also now trying to do it and deal with it in the depths of winter. January is a dark, damp, difficult month at the best of times. So it's quite different than doing this and managing restrictions and limited movement when it was a sunny springtime. Or relatively
soon. Yeah, and we were kind of able to maybe get out and about a bit more. And also, I think, you know, in one way, there's two ways of looking at it. You could say, we've been here before, we got through it, but you know what? It was really difficult, and we're remembering that. And not just for parents, but for children as well, thinking of that time when they were away from their friends. And that anxiety might automatically just kick in because they know what it's been like before. So what are the first steps we should take to just try and do our best to reassure our children?
I think we start with ourselves because our children, especially the younger ones, are going to look to us, their important adults, to take their emotional cues and behavior leads from us. So I think we have to be very honest with ourselves and model good self-care. Start with acceptance and empathy. You know, accept this is really difficult. And what we know is that children thrive and they grow and develop in calm, clear, consistent predictability. The very things that we're struggling to offer them right now. So the fact that our children's behavior may wobble, you might see regression, you might see a return of behaviors that you haven't seen in a while. You know, stuff that belongs to when they were slightly younger. And we have to accept and understand that this is their way of communicating to us that actually I don't know how to make sense of this. This is difficult because they were whipped out of school, preschools and whatnot in March. We didn't know how long that would be for. We all got through it. Then we returned them to school. They took their Christmas holiday and now they haven't gone back and we don't know. It's the end of the month-ish. You know, we can't even give that as a guarantee.
The uncertainty is what makes
exactly.
It very hard. Yeah.
And I think that's hard on us, but it's definitely hard on our children because they need that predictability. So I think we have to start from a place of saying, okay, this is really difficult and I know you miss your friends and you miss school and you miss your teachers and I miss my friends too, and make it really relatable for them. And then try as best we can, because I want to be realistic about this, to put a little bit of structure into our days, because structure is predictability's friend. Structure isn't about rules or rigidity. It's about flexible, adaptable scaffolding that's able to say, okay, we won't be up at 7 or 7:30 in our school uniforms, but, you know, we will all be up and dressed by 9 or 9:30, whatever it is in your house. And we're we're not going to spend all day in our pajamas. We're going to have some kind of structure to our day. And it might be, especially when it comes to the education and schooling, I'm thinking more of middle childhood, even the older ones, to get them engaged and to connect with the idea of learning at home with you, start with something they like. Don't start with a battle. Don't start with the thing that's most difficult and I don't want to do. Maybe don't start for some kids. This is my own projection. Maybe don't start with maths. Maybe start with something that's more arts-based. And they start with creativity. That way you've got them engaged and then you can introduce something a little bit more challenging and structure it with a timer, something like a visual sand timer. You can get them 5 minute, 10 minute, 15 minute timers and say, okay, we're going to do our maths or our Irish or our English or history, whatever it is, until all that sand hits the bottom. Then we're going to do something really fun, and then we're going to do another bit of learning homework. And break up the day with lots of movement as well, so that they're not having to sit still for too long, because that's simply not the way children operate. It's really difficult for them to hold duality in mind. You know, home is where I play and I connect with you and I watch TV and I read my books and I play with my toys. But now we're saying, oh, by the way, this is also where you go to school. So we have to be patient with them as well, and patient with ourselves. I don't know about you, Andy, but I'm certainly not a teacher. You know,
and
so
I think that's Joanna. A lot of parents will be feeling that. They'll think, you know, homeschooling was never my thing, and I have been thrust into it. And also, I think for a lot of parents listening, Joanna, they're in a situation where they're trying to do some of the things that you're doing in terms of having structure and helping kids keep up with schoolwork and even younger children to have some sort of structure. But the other caveat is if they're also trying to balance work, that there's kind of a beautiful disaster melting pot of things that you need, where there might be more television, more screen time, because you don't have a choice, because you're trying to get your work done and look after them. And so you've got this thing of a necessary evil in some ways, but also a guilt trip then that you're putting yourself under and putting yourself under pressure.
And we have to be kinder to ourselves. Like when I talk about acceptance and empathy of our children's behaviours, we have to apply that to ourselves too. And, you know, not all screens are created equal. You and I have talked about that before. So if you're having to use screen time, if it's a TV in a family room where you also have jigsaws, books and toys scattered around, your children might watch a bit and then play a bit and then watch a bit and play a bit. It's not the same as being completely absorbed into a tablet or some device that's on their lap. So maybe try and work on that. And as well, give them a scavenger hunt that they can do with the screen. With the younger kids, make that pictures and visual. And with the older kids, write out a list of simply household items, random words, and they have to find those in the program or movie that they're watching. So they tick off on their list when they find the table, the clock, the loaf of bread, whatever it is. And they do that. So it's keeping it more engaged. And at the end, when you've finished your work call or whatever it is, you can come into them and say, okay, did you find everything on the list? Did anyone find something someone else didn't? What did you find together? What did you miss? And then play a movie game with them where you say, okay, if you were the director of this movie, how would you change it? What scene would you cut? What would you add in? Let's draw that picture out. How would that change the movie? All of a sudden, you've turned the screen time into a more engaging activity that will offset some of that, you know, the risk that we often talk about when kids get too, some of them get too stimulated from too much screen time. But I think if you take a creative approach, it's all about being flexible and adaptable at the moment and just do what you need to do. And that's okay.
And what about when it gets too much? That for both parent and child, because socialisation is so important for children. And I know there's so many parents listening again, where their children of all ages are saying, "I miss my friends. You know, I want to go back to school. I want to play with my friends." And so you can't replace that. You don't feel like that you are good enough. And then the knock-on effect of that is that the parent is exhausted, and the child might have more meltdowns or tantrums. And how do you manage that side of things?
Oh, yeah. I mean, frustration like that is like a hot potato of tension that we toss between us, isn't it? I'm frustrated. You get frustrated. That further frustrates me. And we just kind of knock it back and forth. Usually when that happens, I would say change the scene, change the environment, even if it meant everybody wrapping up and just getting outside. If you have access to a garden, you know, get out there, get some fresh air, run around, even for 10 minutes. that would do, and then back inside again, or do something a bit more creative, get them doing a bit of baking, or if you're doing the prepping the dinner, put all the veggie peelings into a bowl and they can make veggie peeling art. Something that's sensory and creative will usually offset that tension. But even when you're thinking about the peer piece there, Wendy, you know, under 7-year-olds, their important hub of social development is parents, siblings, family. So most of them, now there'll always be exceptions to the rule, most of them will do okay with having increased time with family. So long as it doesn't go on indefinitely, and we're talking about maybe, you know, 6 weeks-ish, maybe a little bit more of this. The older kids, that more middle childhood into teenage years, particularly early adolescence, so we're looking at, say, 8 or 9 up to that 15-year-old stage, their important hub of social development is not family. It's actually their peer group. And that age group really do miss their peers.
How do we support them then?
Yeah, so I think what we could do is use the technology in a creative way. So let's try and have some, not just with school, but some virtual play dates, some virtual connections that they can have. Maybe do a little bit of pen palling, you know, that they can write each other notes, old school style, and post this. So they're actually getting a physical letter in the post from each other. And you could set that up with a like-minded parent that you can buddy up, that you're going to maintain connection and creativity that way. And I think, you know, keep up the play yourself at home, even in this sort of short to medium term, because while the most playful parents out there can't replace peer relationship, it may be enough in the short to medium term to offset that impact. So I think you want to give them lots of empathy and lots of time to kind of express how much they're missing their friends, and just don't jump in with a fix or change agenda and say, I know, but there's nothing we can do. This is the way it is. Just say, gosh, that's really hard, and I wish it was different, and just listen. Often that age group, that sort of middle to early adolescence, they just want a listening ear. They don't want you to fix it or just to reassure, but to allow them to feel what they're feeling and bear witness to that as they work through it themselves. Too often we jump in to rescue our kids from these difficult feelings when actually they just want us to reassure them that the difficult feeling has a context. This is a difficult time.
And just about exploring those feelings, especially for, you know, the various different things and anxieties children might have, or even things like having, if you've more than one child, having all the kids at home all day, there might be more fighting and aggro that way. Is there ways that we can, especially for children who find it hard to express their big feelings and their little people, to get them to do that? Is it good to use like play or puppets or, I don't know, to get them to come out of themselves?
Yeah, all of that. I think when there's a little bit of, you know, argy-bargy coming up with siblings, give them something collaborative rather than competitive to do. So it might be that you throw out on the floor, give them access to a couple of kitchen chairs and some blankets, towels, a few bits like that, clothes pegs, and challenge them to work together to build a fort. And they can build a fort out of the armchairs or whatever it is, and they make that. And then when they have, you can give them their lunch on little plates that they can eat in the fort together. And all of a sudden, they've worked collaboratively to produce something and experience some time in it, and you've gotten a bit of a break while they worked it out. So you're not going to oversee this. You're not going to be, you know, the site manager. You're just going to let them build and work out how to do the fort and experience it. Play like that is good. And then bringing them together, it might be taking a blanket or a duvet cover would be fine. And everybody stands in a circle holding a bit of it, put up a blown-up balloon in the middle, and you call out names, making sure everybody gets called, and you work together to tilt the blanket to send the balloon to each person when they're named, and they move it back and forth between you. Games like that are really, really helpful at working together. So that kind of family playtime
and collaborative play. Just finally want to ask you just briefly, Joanna, before we have to knock off for news, for, you know, parents, when you have one of those really bad days where you've lost your cool, you feel like you've been giving out all day, you haven't, you often talk about modelling, you haven't done well, what is the best way to kind of start again?
You know, repair following rupture is vital, and repair is always the responsibility of us parents. And we all have those days, and maybe we have many moments of those in our day. So what you do is you go back when you feel calmer and grounded, and you say to your child, I'm really sorry that I got loud and I yelled, that my feelings got big, because we're also making sense when that happens for them. You know, I was really frustrated, I had a lot to do, and I wasn't very calm, and I'm sorry about that. Here's what I wish I had said. Can I have a do-over and try that again? again. Our kids are incredibly forgiving of us, and they'll be like, yeah, of course you can. And they'll just be glad to have that moment of meeting and that reconnection with us. So initiate a repair, show them that it's okay to get it wrong, and that you can always make up for it by saying sorry and doing it better the next time. Give yourself a break. You're allowed to get it wrong. Take some time out for ourselves. In some of our families, by the way, that might be when we lock ourselves in the toilet for that private time for 10 minutes just to kind of breathe and exhale. Take a moment to look out a window and do a 5-4-3-2-1. Five things you see, four things you hear, three things you touch, two things you smell, one thing you taste. Take a it's literally a 1 minute to ground yourself and go back in and do better the next time.
Oh, really, okay. Really good advice to finish on. Joanna, as always, thanks so much for joining us
on
the programme today. That's Joanna Fortune, clinical psychotherapist and author of the 15-Minute Parenting Series.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.